Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to commence a study of the book of Habakkuk, starting in chapter 1, which I'll entitle Habakkuk's Two Complaints. A little bit of introduction before we get started. What's the date of composition? Well, the latest possible date is 586 BC, the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon, a well-established date, because Babylon is the nation that Habakkuk is preaching against. Now, that date should be backed up by several years because Babylon is still in existence as Habakkuk is preaching. We know that because we read in Habakkuk 2:3 the following. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. It testifies about the end and will not lie. Though it delays, wait for it, since it will certainly come and not be late. So that's obviously talking about a future event that has not happened yet, the destruction of Babylon. We read in the rest of the book, as we'll see in this chapter also, Babylon is being preached against. Now, how about the earliest date? There's no way to know for sure. A commentator I found on the internet named Lee Smith, who comments on the book of Habakkuk, says that it's somewhere between 640 and 625. In his estimation, that would put Habakkuk during the reign of Josiah, who ruled from 640 to 609, maybe Jehoahaz in 609, Jehoiakim 609, 597, Jehoiachin 597. Now, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, and Jehoiachin are the famous last three kings of Israel. Four kings, I should say. We've got to put Zedekiah in there, who ruled from 597 to 586. So Habakkuk could be ruling during any of those times, during the reign of any of those kings. It doesn't really matter that much. The point is that Habakkuk is prophesying against Babylon, and his prophecies against Babylon, and not only against Babylon, but about the southern kingdom of Judah, which is going to be destroyed by Babylon, he's prophesying against both. Now, do we know anything about Habakkuk himself personally? No, there's no reliable information to tell us. We don't know his residence, we don't know his parents, we don't know his occupation. So we begin now in Habakkuk 1, verse 1, the oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw. Now, oracle is a Hebrew word which is often translated burden. In other words, the burden that God places on a prophet. It's a burden to the prophet because he can't change it, no matter how unacceptable to the prophet it is. It's a burden. I've often wondered why the word is translated that way. You see it a lot, burden. And I suspect that's why, because it's a burden to the prophet. We go now to verses 2 through 4 of Habakkuk chapter 1. Habakkuk pours out his first complaint to the Lord. This chapter, as I said, has two complaints. That's how I titled the chapter, Habakkuk's Two Complaints. This is the first one. How long, Lord, must I call for help and you do not listen, or cry out to you about violence and you do not save? Why do you force me to look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Oppression and violence are right in front of me. Strife is ongoing and conflict escalates. This is why the law is ineffective and justice never emerges. For the wicked restrict the righteous, therefore justice comes out perverted. Now Habakkuk here is not describing the state of the United States of America, which he might very well be if he were living today, but he's talking about most probably violence of the Israelites. He observes that the law is ineffective, as the Holman Christian Study Bible has it. The New American Standard Bible has it. It's ignored. Nobody pays any attention to it. He also says justice is perverted in verse 4. Well, I'm sure that refers to Judah, the practices of the people of southern Israel. Now, other options are that have been suggested. He's referring to the violence of the surrounding nations around him as he looks around, or maybe he's looking at the violence of the Babylonians. I don't think so. I think he's talking about the violence of the Israelites. Now, it's interesting. Most Old Testament prophecies start out with an announcement that the word of God is about to be spoken. Hey, I am such and such a prophet, and I'm about to deliver you the oracle of the Lord. No, not Habakkuk. He starts out by complaining to God, questioning God, which is quite interesting. And it just goes to show that these people who were in touch with God much more than the average person, they were close enough to Yahweh where they could complain to him. God, I don't understand what's going on. Now, that's a common problem with Christians today because things happen that we don't understand, that we don't like. We need to feel free to go to God and say, God, I don't understand this. We need to be humble about it. We need to admit, God, you know more than we know about how to run your universe, but really, this is really getting to be insufferable down here. How long do you plan to let this go on? We go now to Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 5 through 11. Habakkuk continues, or he continues writing, but what he's doing, he's recording the words of Yahweh now. So we now need to look at verses 5 through 11 from the point of view of Yahweh. This is according to Barnes, Ellicott, Kyle and Delitzsch, and Pulpit, and it's obvious as we read that this is who is speaking now. "Look at the nations and observe," says Yahweh. "Be utterly astounded, for something is taking place in your days that you will not believe when you hear about it. Look, I am raising up the Chaldeans," that's the Babylonians, "that bitter, impetuous nation that marches across the earth's open spaces to seize territories not its own. They are fierce and terrifying. Their views of justice and sovereignty stem from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and more fierce than wolves of the night. Their horsemen charge ahead. Their horsemen come from distant lands. They fly like an eagle, swooping to devour. All of them come to do violence. Their faces are set in determination. They gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings, and rulers are a joke to them. They laugh at every fortress and build siege ramps to capture it. Then they sweep by like the wind and pass through. They are guilty. Their strength is their God." Now, I said that these verses, 5 through 11, were spoken by Yahweh. There's a question as to whom Yahweh is addressing. The Pulpit commentator says it's the righteous people in Judah. The Pulpit commentary denies it's the impious people in Judah, the people who don't believe in Yahweh. I don't know if I would split it out like that. It seems to me he's just speaking to the Jews in Judah in general. He's warning them about the coming onslaught from Babylonia. Now in verse 5, Yahweh says, "Look at the nations, Habakkuk, and observe. Be utterly astounded." Why would Habakkuk be astounded? Because it was totally unthinkable that Babylon would conquer Israel. For one reason, the kings of Israel were cocky and arrogant, and also Jerusalem had this nice big wall around it. But I mean, Babylon had been making incursions on Israel for a while. Remember, Daniel had been taken captive in 605, and then there was the 597 attack by Babylon in which one of the kings of Judah was taken captive. Jehoiakim, I think it was. Yes, it was Jehoiakim. So I don't think that Habakkuk would be astounded with the idea that Babylon would attack, but the idea of them coming and burning the city down, now that would be astonishing. Yahweh continues speaking in verse 5 and says, "For something is taking place in your days that you will not believe when you hear about it." Other translations have, "even if it were told to you." Now, first of all, we need to think about who Yahweh is speaking to. Here are some options to Habakkuk himself. The first problem we have with this being addressed to Habakkuk is that why would he be utterly astounded when he hears about the destruction of Babylon? Yahweh's told him about it already. Now, of course, that could mean that Habakkuk heard about the destruction of Babylon from Yahweh in the prophecy, or actually from history if he's living when it happens. But either way, why would he be astounded? God's telling him about it. Well, the answer to that is, yeah, he was told, but he was not told all the details about it. So you could say Habakkuk hears that Jerusalem is going to go down, but then when it actually happens, he's surprised and astounded about how bad it really is happening to Jerusalem. Poole suggests it's the Babylonians being spoken to here. "Something is taking place in your days that you Babylonians will not believe when you hear about it." But the problem with that, to me, is why would the Babylonians be surprised about something they were doing? They were the ones bringing the judgment. Why wouldn't they believe it? I think that's a one-off suggestion from Mr. Poole. Now, the "you," when you hear about it, I've said it's Habakkuk. There's another option. It could be all of the people of Judah, Habakkuk being their representative, that the people of Judah will not believe when they hear about the destruction of their city, their capital city, even if they were in Jerusalem or outside of Jerusalem in the hinterlands. Well, if that's the case, then Habakkuk is representing all the Israelites. Now, I was curious about whether that "you" was singular or plural. I figured that would resolve the issue as to whether God is speaking to Habakkuk or whether he's speaking to the whole people of Judea. Unfortunately, the Hebrew doesn't tell us whether the "you" is singular or plural. I did look it up. So I'm going to assume that it's Habakkuk that's being spoken about, and he is just going to be shocked out of his mind when he sees how bad the destruction of Jerusalem really is. And again, I'm assuming he will be alive at the time of the Babylonian invasion in 586. And of course, this is hyperbole. To say he's not going to believe it means this is unbelievable. When we say the same thing, we do the same thing. It's believable because it happened. We were just told about something, and the first word out of our mouth, it's unbelievable. Can you believe that so-and-so accepted Christ? He used to be a drug dealer. He used to be an atheist. That's unbelievable. Well, it's actually believable because we just heard about it. But it's such an astounding thing, we say it's unbelievable. And so I'm sure the Hebrews doing the same thing here. You're not going to believe this when you hear about it. It's just unbelievable how bad Jerusalem looks after the Babylonians burn it down. And it's unbelievable what they did to the civilian population. Verse 6, look, I am raising up the Chaldeans. Chaldeans is the Babylonians. There are technical distinctions between the Chaldeans and the Babylonians that I knew at one time, but which I've forgotten. The Holman Christian Study Bible note says, quote, equals the Babylonians, unquote, as a note right by that word Chaldeans. And so now Yahweh here brings the unpleasant news that the Babylonians are going to be the instrument of his chastisement of his people Israel, the two southern tribes of Judah that are left. Now this attack from the Babylonians that's so astounding and unbelievable, Paul uses this as a quotation when he's on his first journey in Acts 13. He's speaking to the Jews in the synagogue at Antioch of Pisidia in Asia Minor. He's warning them about rejecting the gospel. And he says in Acts 13:41, look, you scoffers, marvel and vanish away, because I am doing a work in your days, a work that you will never believe, even if someone were to explain it to you. He quotes from the Septuagint version of that verse. He warns the Jews in the synagogue in the Antioch of Pisidia, you're going to die if you don't accept the gospel. You're going to spiritually die. So that's a pretty good analogy, although some people say, well, you know, he's sort of quoting that out of context, because in Acts 13, Paul is doing a work, and the work is the gospel. That's a good thing. Whereas in Habakkuk, God is doing a work, which is sort of a bad thing from the point of the Jews. They're getting punished. Paul has the right to do that. He used the Old Testament to illustrate a point. Nothing wrong with that. Now, Habakkuk describes the Babylonians in pretty terrifying terms. They're bitter. They are impetuous. They march across the earth's open spaces to seize territories. Perfect description of Babylon. I mean, they attacked Egypt, Edom, Ammon, Moab, Syria. They are fierce and terrifying. Their views of justice and sovereignty stem from themselves. And what he means by that, what Habakkuk means by that is, or what Yahweh means by that is, these guys are a law unto themselves. Their views of justice and sovereignty, that's law, their views are derived from themselves. They think they are the measure of what's good and right. Not God, not Yahweh, but themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the wolves of the night. Their horsemen charge ahead. Their horsemen come from distant lands. They fly like an eagle, swooping to devour. That's clear enough. All of them come to do violence. Their faces are set in determination. They gather prisoners like sand. If one took a handful of sand in his hand, counted all the grains of sand in his hand, it would be quite a lot. That would be the number of individual prisoners that would be caught by that man. Verse 10, the Babylonians mock kings. Rulers are a joke to them. That's because they're so powerful. If you're the king of a little country or a little city, the Babylonians don't care. Ha, 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 you say you're going to stop us? Let's see you try. The Babylonians laugh at every fortress and build siege ramps to capture it. Then they sweep by like the wind and pass through. That's what they're going to do to you, Judah. You're cooked. But then at the end of verse 11, Habakkuk says, they are guilty. The Babylonians are guilty. Their strength is their God. So even though they are being used to frighten the people of Judah to death here, Habakkuk still points out that even though they are God's instrument to chastise his people Israel, they're still guilty. Their strength is their God. They worship their military might, and they think that they can play God with their military. We go now to Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 12. Yahweh turns the floor back over to Habakkuk. Habakkuk is now speaking, and he says, are you not from eternity, Yahweh my God, my Holy One? You will not die. Lord, you appointed them to execute judgment. My rock, you destined them to punish us. The NASB has to correct us, which I like a little bit better. Now Habakkuk says that Yahweh will not die. Well, of course he's not going to die. And I think what he's getting at is you're going to live forever to execute your covenants. Habakkuk says, Yahweh, you appointed the Babylonians to execute judgment on Judah. And that's why Habakkuk is emphasizing the eternity of Yahweh. Are you not from eternity, Yahweh? My Holy One, you will not die, because Yahweh will live long enough to carry out his covenant promises. This is very typical of the prophets. The covenant nation of Israel is judged, purged, purified with fire, refined. But the remnant always survives the purification process so that God can carry out his covenant promises to Abraham, land, a seed, and blessings to the nations. So this is very typical of prophets, to pronounce judgment on the mass and salvation for the remnant. We go now to Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 13 through 17, and we will finish this chapter. Habakkuk is still speaking. He's speaking to Yahweh, and he says, your eyes are too pure to look on evil, and you cannot tolerate wrongdoing. So why do you tolerate those who are treacherous? This is Habakkuk's second complaint. Why are you silent while one who is wicked swallows up one who is more righteous than himself? You have made mankind like the fish of the sea, like marine creatures that have no ruler. The Chaldeans pull them all up with a hook, catch them in their dragnet, and gather them in their fishing net. That is why they are glad and rejoice. That is why they sacrifice to their dragnet and burn incense to their fishing net. For by these things their portion is rich and their food plentiful. Will they therefore empty their net and continually slaughter nations without mercy? Habakkuk's first complaint in this chapter was that the Israelites, the people of Judah, were violent and evil. Now his second complaint is, you mean Yahweh, you're going to punish these Israelites with the Babylonians? They're more evil than the Israelites are. So what's going on here? Now, verse 13 is a very good verse, I think, to evangelize with. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil, and you cannot tolerate wrongdoing. I would always tell college students in China, well, if you think you're good because of all the good grades you're making or whatever, God is so good he can't tolerate one little molecule of evil. Not one lie, the lies that you tell your parents all the time when they ask you if you have a boyfriend. God can't tolerate it. The NASB has, you cannot look on wickedness with favor. No, he doesn't. He is a pure and righteous and perfectly holy God, and anybody that thinks that he has anything that he can offer this God in order to effect his own salvation is a moron. It's not going to happen. And so Habakkuk starts out with the obvious, God is holy. So God, if you're so holy, so Yahweh, if you're so holy, why do you tolerate these Babylonians who are so treacherous? Why are you so silent while one who is wicked, the Babylonians, swallows up one who is more righteous than himself? Now notice that Habakkuk says that the Jews were more righteous than the Babylonians, and that's probably true, but Habakkuk has just finished blasting the Jews as being horrible. No justice, they pervert justice, and so forth. Well, that's because as bad as Judah was, they didn't hold a candle to the Babylonians, because the Babylonians were devil worshippers. The Jews were sinning against the light they had, which was bad, but the Babylonians were darkness themselves. They were openly worshiping the darkness. In verse 14, Habakkuk says, you, Yahweh, have made mankind like the fish of the sea, like marine creatures that have no ruler. If you think about it, if you look at fish swimming around in the ocean, they look like they have no ruler. The idea here is Habakkuk is trying to point out that the nations don't recognize God as their ruler. John Gill and Lee Smith both say that that's what Habakkuk is aiming at here. People are running around on this planet, and they think that God is not sovereign over this planet. And as a result, in verse 15, the Chaldeans pulled them all up with a hook. So mankind is being pulled up, not just the Jews, but all of the nations around Israel at that time. Edom, Ammon, Moab, Syria, the Philistines, the Aramites, the Syrians. The Chaldeans pull them all up with a hook, catch them in their dragnet, gather them in their fishing net. The Chaldeans are glad about this. They rejoice. And then they sacrifice to said dragnet and burn incense to their fishing net. Now, I don't know whether they did that literally. I have a feeling that Habakkuk is just trying to make a point poetically, that they worship their strength. They worship their own works, the work of their hands, their ability to catch fish, i.e. to catch people that have no ruler. The Babylonians want to be the people's ruler. Verse 17, will they therefore empty their net and continually slaughter nations without mercy? In other words, they catch people, throw them out, make them slaves, and go out and catch some more as they catch nation after nation after nation. So to summarize Habakkuk's second complaint here, Habakkuk can't figure why God would use such a wicked nation as Babylonia to punish Israel. Now, I'm assuming here that in verse 13, when Habakkuk says, so why do you tolerate those who are treacherous? The treacherous are the Babylonians. I think that some people might say the treacherous were the Jews. I pointed out in verse 2 that some people dispute exactly who Habakkuk is speaking to, and I decided Habakkuk is speaking to the Jews at first, and then he is speaking to the Babylonians. And so Habakkuk can't figure out why God would use a nasty nation like Babylonia to punish the Jews. And not only that, he doesn't know how long the punishment is going to last. Habakkuk, in short, did not understand that God can use whomever he wants to use to do whatever he wants to do. And he wants to judge Israel for its horrible idolatry and apostasy and desertion of their God Yahweh. So on that somber note, we have finished Habakkuk chapter 1. We are now prepared to go to Habakkuk chapter 2 in our next audio, which I will entitle, The Righteous Shall Live by Faith, and Woe to the Chaldeans. Very famous quotation of Habakkuk that's used all through the New Testament, The Righteous Shall Live by Faith. So ladies and gentlemen, I hope you join me in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.